This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, good morning. It's Wednesday. I took a screenshot of my weather app this morning. Do you want to see what it says? Let me show you this. Yeah, this is going to frighten the hell out of you. Cold, right? But you think it's cold here, and then you... So I went to my weather app. I've got all these funny places on there. Yes.
Minus 49.
No, that's in Antarctica.
Yeah, I do not want to be there.
Oh, listen, it's not good.
Let's just be grateful for what we have here. Do we have here?
I'll tell you what we have here. We've got this very sad news today that Johnny Clegg passed away last night.
Man.
And I think a lot of people are very upset. I'm upset. We knew he had cancer, and we spoke to him just last year. I had a really, really powerful discussion with him. It was a really frank interview. It was meaningful. It was special. I felt afterwards it was just the most honest discussion around a life well lived and mm-hmm. and a life of music. And you know, this guy, he was a real through and through musician. He lived for it. He told the stories in that interview, and we'll replay it at 8 o'clock this morning. You can hear it yourself. We were scheduled to have Jesse Clegg in the studio today.
What are the chances?
I was looking at the notes for the show last night, around 5-6 o'clock, and I saw that Jesse Clegg was meant to be our guest, and I thought, you know what, I'm thrilled because I want to find out how Johnny's doing. And Jesse's been really busy. He's been doing some stuff, too, that I wanted to catch up on. And lo and behold, I get an update on my phone from Penny Stein, who we've also had as a guest here many times. And Penny's worked with all these musicians. And she's posted The Crossing, which is that beautiful version of The Crossing with all Johnny's friends who got together to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this and I thought, what are the chances that of all the guests we had booked for today, Jesse Clegg was the guy who was going to come in and be with us. And I was, so it was in my head. And I saw this and it just, you know, sometimes the stuff is too close for comfort. I have to say, after that really powerful and meaningful and really close personal discussion I had with Johnny, which we all had with him because it's here for you to hear. My last interaction with him was as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the show that he put on at the Dome. I never go to concerts. I wanted to go to this one. It was beautiful. There were, you know, Jesse sang with him and Art Matthews sang with him and a bunch of these guys, Arno Carstens. It was beautiful. And I was pretty emotional at the concert, and that was my last interaction with him. It felt right that because I'd started off as just a fan, I would end up as just a fan. And, you know, I knew the guy, and it was enough to me that we'd had these few interactions that we'd had. He'd always been this tremendous gentleman, generous to a fault,
yeah,
just a great guy. And you knew him, Gord, right? You knew him as
well.
Yeah,
man. I mean, Johnny's obviously a truly great South African, a truly great human being, not just musically, but in terms of the things.
You put up a little tribute.
Yeah,
on Facebook,
you see,
too.
I don't want to make any of this about me.
No, sure.
But you know, like, it's difficult to say when you post a thing like that on Facebook, like, hey, you know, I feel this, and I've got a lot of sympathy for his family because I'm quite close with some of them, and not make it, hey, I knew him.
No, sure. But I want to know about that.
You know, Jesse's a very good friend of mine. Jesse is one of two examples when I was the music editor, which was like a secondary, basically he has extra work, but you get a second title at FHM. I was the entertainment editor, and all the new music came through me, and I would discard what was bollocks and not of interest to our audience, and I would, you know, listen to half of it myself and distribute the other half to the other people. This point is, on my desk arrives Jesse Clegg's album.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just short of 18 at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God. So cash in from Johnny Clegg's lighty, isn't it? Like, look at him. it's a very cheesy guitar he's holding. Sure. I was like, this is going to be cack. But let's listen to it anyway and put it on. And I was like, oh my God, like this is great. It's not just good. It's great. It's not my taste because I'm not adult contemporary. But I was like, guys, this is going to be big. It's not out yet, but it's going to be big. And I sort of put him up front in the magazine, and people were a bit like, oh, God, I don't know. So another example was Jack Parra, but that's neither here nor there. And Jesse was just so excited to be in FHM, and he wanted to come and see the office. And I brought him to the office, and he was like a wide-eyed kid. And I immediately thought, I love this kid. He's great. I mean, he's just turned 30.
Yeah.
I missed his 21st, but was invited to it and got sent photos of him just being a regular kid, you know. And I would get invited to the house. He at that stage had already moved out, but the family had a beautiful home in kind of the Bryanston-y Woodmeady, Bryanston-y Wendy Woody kind of area, Morningside basically. And just a nice place, but not a mansion, the kind of place my friends and I kind of grew up in. And they would have brides there in the garden and pool parties and love to play volleyball. And I had an ex at the time, Ingrid, a total sweetheart of a human, and she and Johnny just hit it off in a totally non-weird way, and they'd sit and chat, and he would just tell stories.
Oh my God, he could tell a story.
And he had all the time in the world for it, and you would mention like the sun, and he'd tell you about how like different cultures around the world. He studied anthropology, so mm-hmm. not just South African cultures inside and out, all over the world.
Yeah.
Sun myths from everyone, and just happy to be around people. He had this deep-seated smile in his eyes. So it's easy to forget that he's just one of the all-time greats, not just great South African musicians, but great entertainers and musicians. And I also went to some of those last shows. There was a last time I saw him was maybe 3-4 years ago. Jesse asked if I wanted to go with him and a bunch of friends watch Johnny Clegg with my girlfriend. I was like, obviously. And so we sit in this row. We've got like 12 seats. So it's all friends of ours from beginning to end. And Jesse's in the middle. And there's a massive cross-section of people. And as we're finishing the show, and this is a true flipping thing that I couldn't believe, the old lady in her 60s at least goes, oh, it's so nice to see such young gentlemen also liking Johnny Clegg. Tell me, are you a big fan? To Jesse, are you a big fan? And he goes, yeah, pretty big.
That's
and
amazing.
We left. And so my heart breaks for Jesse and his brother because they're great, great, unspoiled. Unspoiled by fame now, Jesse, but just unspoiled good kids. And they've lost their dad, and that's for me. My friend's lost his dad, and that's for me the thing I'm most sad about. And then I share the joint pain as a South African. I mean, 66, you could say, it's not exactly, he's not a baby, but that's young. And he probably deserved at least 10 more good years.
It's really nice to see such an outpouring of you know, we do have a few national treasures left. Desmond Tutu is one of them. Johnny Clegg was one of them. There are a few people who I think the whole of South Africa kind of understands that even if you don't think that these people lived the perfect life, because there are some weird utopian type people in this world who seem to have this idea that there is a perfect human, and there isn't. I mean, everybody has their faults, and you know, there are going to be stories about how there always are when someone dies. There's stories about how this person did this at this point and this wasn't the best thing for them to do. That's unfortunately what happens.
Yeah.
But there are some people who, it seems, everybody just understands, look,
they're so special.
This guy kind of added more. He added more value than anything that we can give him back.
What a life story, man.
Yeah, some people just seem to operate on like a higher plane than others. I don't know. You know, I don't want to deify people.
By the way,
people.
You sound like shit.
That's same throaty, chesty jaw that I've had for like a week. This is my new life.
I don't think I'd call it a jaw.
This is my new life. Anyway. There's certain people who just, you can see and feel that they operate at a frequency above. You didn't need to watch one of Johnny's performances to meet him and go, holy shit, like this person is a bit too good for here. And I mean, I don't mean to aggrandize or deify someone now that they've passed away. I would have said this to you last week.
No, I agree. I felt the same thing every time we had a conversation. And you just mentioned now your friend Ingrid who'd sit with him. And he did have a wealth of knowledge and was a tremendously interesting human being. Even if he hadn't been the great musician he was, he would have been one of those people you'd love to have had around.
And pick their brain.
To chat
I mean, you know, Ingrid likes to bry. She likes to man the braai or woman the braai. And she did that at Johnny's braai. And he was like fascinated and came and spoke to her. And they just didn't stop talking for ages. But he started talking about the division of meat in different cultures, different African cultures and different global cultures. And you could just sit there rapt and fascinated about how different people at different life stages in different cultures get served different parts of the animal. And I'll never forget, like, it turned into, hey, you're doing a great job, Brian. Thank you for helping, to like an hour and a half later, still listening to him talking about like how meat's important culturally all over the world. Just like, yeah. Wow, dude, thanks for the amazing lecture. Could have been a podcast, you know?
So strange that we were going to have Jesse in this morning, because it's weird how these things happen. I mean, it could have been anybody.
Yeah.
And this doesn't necessarily mean anything. I'm not one of those people who ascribes value post to something. But we do have a couple of other people who will be joining us later on just to talk about the guy. They worked with him. They were all part of that that collaboration of Johnny Clegg and friends that they did towards the end. Zolani's going to talk to us, Majozi, Ross Learmonth from Prime Circle, and we'll talk to them. We'll also get into that interview that I had with Johnny. It was under a year ago.
It was in 2017.
You're
I was looking
kidding.
At the archives.
I've lost a year somewhere.
I think the 3rd of October.
Jeez, all right.
Yeah, we're going to be looking like Face App for real. It's happening.
No, okay. Listen,
can we get into that quickly for a second?
Face App.
So I haven't downloaded it.
We'll
okay.
double back to Johnny in a while. So Gord sends me a picture. Well, I saw Gord's picture on Facebook.
Yeah.
Of him with a Face App where they've made him old.
Mm-hmm.
Holy! First of all, the friend who has that phone has the best camera I've ever seen.
Yes,
in my
Yes, my buddy
life.
Shana is on a I don't know if it's a brand new one, but he's on a recent generation iPhone.
It's amazing.
But you got to use Face App. Like I showed it to my brothers, and I was like, and they were like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna get this app and do me." And there are many aging
there are lots of
filters.
This one's the one.
Face App, if I'm not mistaken, one word is like trans. Like they've what's the word? They've
Well, a friend,
leapt forward
listen to this.
In terms
a friend
of
mine reckons they've hacked the algorithm that's running our simulation.
No.
No. You know how there's this idea, and a couple of people subscribe to it, including Elon Musk and some other Silicon Valley types. They say that we're a simulation. We're living in a simulation. We're actually a computer program.
This is going to hurt my head thinking about
and that
this.
Someone
I love
has,
this
someone
stuff because you
stolen,
can't disprove it.
Someone exactly. Someone has stolen the algorithm for our timeline, which is our calendar, and the variable is our age, right? And they've stolen this and they've just projected it forward.
But I don't know, it's too idealized in certain ways, because you like, I mean, I look like hell in that picture.
You look like you're going to look. I was blown away.
In everybody's picture, they tend to give you like, nice white hair.
See, can
that's
we put,
neatly
can we put this one of Gord and the one of me?
I love how nothing of mine is sacred on this show.
Can we put it on the
tripping on MDMA on holiday?
Jesus.
You know,
I mean, this is how you
life.
Can. This is what you've got to look forward to, my friend. You
Gord,
are.
That's what the ladies have got to look forward to.
Let me
Mate,
tell you
I'm going to be behind the eyes, not in front.
I have to be honest. It does. It doesn't look
freaky.
Half too bad.
No, you don't look terrible. Mm. Don't get me wrong.
I just look like an old guy. I look like Kyle Gass from Tenacious D.
But you look like you.
Yeah, but
like I could imagine. I want to look at these pictures when we're all in our 70s one day. I want to look at these and say, look, how close was it?
Well, if Gord had got this far, Adaji Skibi was starting to look like this.
I spent the entire day laughing my ass off because all of my friends on all these groups that I'm on were sending me their versions. And it was hilarious.
Not
now,
to
I
be confused with sending you their virgins, which is a totally different kind of party.
I was kind of confused as to why it was so funny to me, because I was laughing out loud in the car, driving, tears streaming down my face. It was so funny.
It's because these ones are so good. I mean, you've seen ones before where they kind of droop your jowls and lighten your skin a bit grayer. Like, you know, this Face App.
It's unbelievable.
It's next level.
Now, this is only the free version. Because on the other version, the pro one, which you have to pay for, I mean, it's like $600 or whatever. Like, I'm not going to do that, right? I'm not going to pay $600, but it's got all these features on it that look amazing, especially for girls. They've got these makeup things, and like for guys, you can get different hairstyles and all kinds of things. It's clever. It's amazing what these apps can do. And of course, what it does, it feeds into the single greatest power on the internet at the moment, which is narcissism.
Oh my God, yes. People, that's so well put, dude.
People love nothing more than themselves. In no
or
short
an
supply.
Aggrandized version of themselves.
Oh, dude. Even
but, I
but
also
I'll tell you something interesting about this Face App, though. And this old thing is you can tell who the most vain people are and who the people
are. They're the ones who won't post it.
No sense of humor because they will not post a picture.
Because you look old and shitty. I mean, I don't look good in that particular one. I mean, Gareth's one.
No, you look shit. He looked like, I look shit as well.
No, dude, you
did you see the second one?
You've still got Lego hair.
Oh, please.
I saw the one where you turned yourself into George Michael. Obviously, you were playing around.
Okay, so here's the one.
You look like a beautiful, wise old man.
No.
That's the one without the beard.
The one without the beard is terrifying.
Yeah, but you're still just
shocking.
And the one where you've got brown hair, everything, and a lightly homosexual beard.
Yeah, no, that was hilarious.
A lightly beard?
A lightly homosexual. Look at his
don't
beard.
Be homophobic.
It's not homophobic.
Right,
it's homo observant.
Stop
tell
it.
Me if that,
no.
Tell me if that's not slightly gay, the way that he looks.
Hit him.
I am not going to encourage or endorse anything you say right now.
Just hold on. I do want you to go through your friend timeline, and I want you to see which friends are too vain to post a picture of themselves.
It's a really astute observation that because
those people are douchebags. Yeah. I want to tell you now, this is the first opportunity that Instagram and Facebook and Twitter have given you to see which of your friends are fucking douchebags.
Okay, look, fair enough, some people are not interested.
They want to be seen as beautiful all the time. There is not one of these Insta celebrities, any of these women who filter the living hell out of all of their pictures, who will post one of those. First of all, their original pictures aren't HD enough to make the app work because they blur the hell out of them, so they look like they've been taken in soft focus on a beach at 5:15 in the afternoon.
Get me started on filters
so,
and shit like that.
Second of all, if these people had any sense of humor, they'd realize that, you know what, one thing is absolutely for sure, your looks are going to fade. You're going to look terrible one day.
Whether you like it or not.
Right.
We're just old.
So, honey, and I read the most brilliant article which is related to this. I'll get to that in a second. I want you to find and I want you to force these people who are so vain to post their old pictures because it will ruin their otherwise great Instagram.
Yeah.
Where they only post perfect pictures.
But look, I don't necessarily agree that not posting one of these equals vanity. Some people just aren't interested.
You can tell.
But
if it's the ones who have all the 100,000 selfies on their Instagram and that's all,
To your point, there's not a correlation in terms of the friends that I've seen sharing ones where you look like shit.
Yeah.
And who's the good looking friends? Some of my like better looking, you know, naturally quite beautiful friends are like, ah, look at me, and other people aren't.
Sure. I mean no, there's no correlation.
So, you know, obviously
you can be very good looking.
It's about being comfortable
vain.
With yourself
yeah,
and not about thinking I'm too good looking for this.
I mean, I didn't like anything about looking old, but I still think it's hilarious and I needed to post
it. Fascinating how the technology's come along.
How
old
do you reckon you are in this photo, Gareth?
I think the one with the beard, I look less old, but I would say probably in my late 60s in that one.
Late 60s. Gord, how old do you reckon you are?
I look like Kenny Rogers.
I look 70, between 70 and 75. Gareth looks like he should be commanding a Lannister army, and I look like I've survived alcoholism longer than nature should allow.
You see, now that you've said Kenny Rogers, I can't unsee that. I actually do know
it's
not
it's
Kenny
Rogers.
Rogers.
Kenny I'm Rogers, telling you, dude. It's Kenny Rogers.
This is all on our Cliff Central Instagram now.
Yeah, I look like Kyle Gass in 15 years.
But don't you ever, because...
I better just look up Kyle Gass.
From Tenacious D, Jack Black and KG.
G-A-S?
Kyle, yeah, K-Y-L-E-G-A-S.
Okay, because your dad is also still around, Gord. Don't you ever look at your dad?
Unfortunately, yeah, he is alive, and he looks like...
Unfortunately.
He looks like that after going 12 rounds with life and his corner not throwing in the towel on the fourth.
But don't you look at your dad and go, is that how we'll also look?
Well,
I hope to be dead.
Lot of people said that I looked like my dad, and that's not the worst thing anyone's ever said to me. I would take that, thank you. But I've just looked at Kyle Gass.
See what you mean, holy shit. I'm turning into Kyle Gass. My friends have been saying it for years.
All right.
Only without the fame, you know, like global audience.
I got to read you something.
Okay.
This is quite interesting. I found this article about how Instagram influencers aren't influencing people anymore.
I saw that, but didn't read it. So give us the lowdown.
I thought this was interesting in the light of, you know, this face app thing and how some people don't think it's funny to post themselves not looking at their best and their most sparkliest after they've used some other app.
Yeah, I've got some views for
airbrush the hell out of them.
Too.
Anyway, so apparently these influencers are not having the influence that they used to have. Likes are at an all-time low. Engagements are at an all-time low. The only people who genuinely get a lot of interaction anymore on social media are people who have small followings, and we're talking like 1,000 or so, and who are actually friends with all those people on their profile.
And let me guess, who have an interesting spin on things, whether it's funny informed or inside track.
Notwithstanding,
you can't just be pretty and holding teeth whitening shit and go, hello.
Right. Notwithstanding the quality of your content, which obviously is always going to be an impact, there's always going to be value there. I mean, I've realized sometimes when I post stuff, it gets wild reaction just because it's something that's different and interesting. And you must feel the same. And I'm not looking for that attention, by the way. I very seldom use social media for those purposes anymore. But here's the interesting thing. All these big brands and these people who were paying these Instagram and Twitter and other influencers before are starting to pull away.
And they're moving towards podcasts. And I don't just say that like in reference to this and kind of more formally structured podcasts. Like you got guys who are like, I'm the fishing shoe guy, all about the latest and greatest in fishing shoes. Got an audience of 50,000, which by American or European standards is not that much. But somebody's willing, like some company with a very specific product relevant to that audience, very targeted audience, are willing to give the guy enough to make a living from his little podcast for it to be brought to you by Smith's Shoe Company.
Listen,
and that's, I think, where people are going. It's like, have you? What quality audience do you have?
Yes, exactly.
Are you just a woman and leery man? And I say leery man, I mean, I'm not above following people because they're attractive, but you've got certain people who just like want to, gawk.
It was, though, a matter of time.
Because of course it was. This was unsustainable from the
problem get-go. The problem with influencers currently is endorsement and the value of the endorsement. If today I say, this is the best cup of coffee ever, everyone needs to go out and hashtag and buy it and use a promo code X. And then tomorrow I'm also saying, this is the best cup of coffee ever.
What tomorrow's is the, impact's going to be a tiny fraction.
What
of
is the value of what you say is great and fantastic?
We all know somebody who's in inverted commas, sponsored by something.
Yeah.
Right? It's either there's a bicycle shop or there's a supplement company and some kind of protein shake, or there's some girl who's got a makeup brand or whatever. Now, I just tune a lot of that out. I cannot tell you. Some of these people are my friends. Like, I know them. I see them regularly. But I can't tell you the name of the products they're involved in. And I don't care. I do not care. In the first posting, as C has just pointed out, I will go and like this stuff because you want to be supportive.
Yeah.
But I don't interact. Yeah, and I'm not going to buy stuff because some person who I happen to know is on the internet telling me to. It's different if I say to Sia, hey, Sia, listen, I need to buy a hair product. What do you recommend? And Sia's the guy to tell me what it is because I trust him. That's different.
Mm.
And I think what's happened is we've blurred the lines between that and these people you don't know on social media who are trying to sell you stuff because they're being paid money. I don't want a salesman in my life. I don't want a salesman in my house. And I don't want a salesman in my feed. And it's become ugly. It's become gross. I have always understood how the media world has had to have advertising to survive.
Mm-hmm.
We all get that. But there's a line. And it seems like these influencers, because a lot of these people are, they're young and they don't necessarily know the rules. And they'll put something up and they're just hard selling the whole time. It's just marketing message after marketing message after. Can you imagine how this show would sound and how few people would want to listen to it if we were just doing hard marketing the whole time?
That was the problem.
It would fall apart, right?
Where there was no line to it. I think it still works with people who do something once in a blue moon. But if there are certain people who are honestly known as influencers, you go onto their timeline and it's just
that's their job. They actually describe themselves as being an influencer. That is,
I think that's a disservice to the entire marketing strategy.
It's not a job anymore. And this article, and it's one of many, you can go online now and look at them. It's starting to fall apart. If you think that you are going to get your holidays and your lifestyle paid for by just posting stuff on social media that makes you look cool, you've got another thing coming. It's done.
Mm.
It's finished. Thank you.
I was having a laugh about, and I just was wanting to read some of it word for word, but it appears this individual has disappeared off social media again. But there's a former model. She disappeared for a few years. She used to be an EFC girl. We had her in FHM many years ago. And I mean, sweet as a human being as she is, it's just massive boobs, and like mm-hmm. this girl's hot, and that's her thing.
Right.
And she vanished for a long time, and now she's back, and she's managed to keep it together and looks really good, even despite being 7 or 8 years older since anyone saw her. But every single picture has got some empowering life power quote underneath it, and it is. The picture says, "Look how bloody great I look in sex lingerie." That is what the picture means.
Yeah,
Everybody come and see how fucking great I look in this tiny bikini.
But the caption will
than,
say?
Less than 1% of 1% of the bikini-wearing population would feel confident pulling off, but I can pull it off. Look at my boobs.
And then the caption will say?
If life knocks you down, you have to just believe in your inner power. No one can take your power if you don't let them. Our struggles are what define us. Be your own flame. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, chick, what? Can't you spell tits?
There has to be something more to that. And I'm telling you.
Yeah, but you know, and then, but on the influencers using products thing, like for example, you know, also from my background professionally, I know a lot of professionally good-looking people who I know who are just very cool people. Mm-hmm. Like Tracy McGregor is just a great human being, and the fact that she's the best-looking human in the world.
And
you
Kerry.
Know, in fitter days, I've like trained with her, and she's just a great person, and you forget almost how beautiful she is. But like someone like that will post the thing of like, isn't my new hair great? And they can see they've just had their hair done.
Yeah.
Like, thanks so much to Jesse and Jerry, and Jerry's barber for the great hair. Obviously, they've got the haircut for free, and their hair does look great. And it's like, wow, shit, you did get a good haircut.
Yeah, you'll
some
pause.
People might ask, hey, who did your hair? It looks great.
Right.
Makes sense. But if you're holding up like, you know,
product,
a kale juice rectal flush instant de-cleanse, and smiling and going, how do I stay so chipper with my perfect life? Well, I rectal cleanse with kale juice. Like, I don't care. I don't care what toothpaste
I might
you
be
use,
overthinking chick. It or going off with the wrong thoughts here. But do you think influencers sometimes don't work because of the standard of who they are?
What do you mean?
Like you say with Tracy being perfect and she looks great, and it's almost like an aspirational level to wanting to be like that.
There's a professional and there's an amateur series.
You know, yes, I get my neighbor might have 50,000 followers, but it's like, ugh.
No,
well, you and I.
It's not about the number of followers either. Some people do it really well.
I think there's
really
an aspirational quality.
Some people do it beautifully and it's elegantly done, and it feels like it's not being shoved
not being
down
forced.
Your throat.
And that being whatever it is you're trading off. I'm good looking. I'm popular. I'm super connected in the trendy music scene. Whatever you're trading off can't be the only thing about you. Like person who I don't want to mention, who's literally like her whole.
I hear you.
Never mind who she is in real life. I'm not saying she's not a worthwhile human in real life. I'm saying her social media presence is about, I have huge tits. Look how good I look in this picture. So then just talk about it. Be like, you know, I love this new lingerie. Makes me feel feminine. Love how much it reveals of my leg without being uncomfortable. Some G-strings can really chafe you, but these are lovely. Like, talk about the product because that's what you're doing.
Sure.
You know?
And I would believe
there's
it
there's a lot more to you know, these guys come with huge boob sizes because often it's so hard to get small bottoms and big tops that match. Talk about the fucking product. Like, there are some people who there's lots to them as a person, and they also happen to be so attractive that they're part of their business
it's
is
effortless.
That.
Yes.
You know, I, for example, make a decent amount of my kind of, I don't know if money is the way to put it, but like a big part of my shtick is I talk, and I don't literally go online and I'm just like, all I do is talk. Although you wouldn't think so to listen to me on radio.
Yeah, in fact, but I have a comment here for you.
Gord, shut up again.
Yeah. Gareth, please ask Gord to stop talking over everyone. It makes for shitty radio. He needs to be reminded he's not in a bar with his mates.
Oh. That's exactly what I come here and talk like. I'm like, it's cool. In the morning, I get together with the homies and we talk like we're in a bar.
And that is from Russell.
Russell, I would skip Wednesdays if I were you, mate. Because I'm probably not
going
to.
By the way, Tumelo has sent me a brilliant picture of him with the Face app, and he looks like one of those old-ass men. He's got like gray in his beard.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Bald in the top of his little bit of gray. It's amazing what this app does. And he looks like...
And he's a regular dude in his kind of probably early mid-30s in the starting photo.
He's quite good-looking in his normal picture. And then he looks like a proper old man, like the kind that you would encounter at the queue at the ATM. You
know? Yeah, he looks a bit like the dude who plays Birdo in Avengers. What, Falcon? What's the flying oak's name?
Yeah, exactly. And then... Who's this? It's Natalie sent me a picture of her guy who's just done the app.
Natalie, that's a good-looking guy of yours.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Oh, stick with him.
He's handsome post-app.
Yeah, you'll have a good 30 years there.
This guy looks like a homeless person. Clint from The Vault.
Clint's quite a handsome oak. He's a regular listener to the show, and he's a fan. He interacts with us often.
I got to tell you, man, you look terrible.
Yeah, Clint, don't age like that, boo.
You're going to be an old-ass, nasty-ass man.
I still think I'm aging the worst out of everyone I've seen so far.
All the love in my heart, you look like the guy when you're standing in queue. In a queue somewhere, who's just going to give you their life story? You're like, no,
need is 10 rand.
I just need
home.
A new passport. I don't want to make conversation.
I just need 10 rand to get home. Yeah. Exactly. All right, let's get into some news, please, because we tend to get waylaid.
Because of all the pub style conversation that we enjoy on a Wednesday, Garrett.
Don't worry about it. So, Mark Batchelor.
Oh, yeah, some updates on that story.
Apparently, I mean, this is amazing. Police have taken a statement from the guy who was traveling with him mm-hmm. when he was shot multiple times outside his home on Monday night. The former professional football player was ambushed in Olivedale in northern Johannesburg. Police are now searching for two gunmen who were traveling on motorbikes before opening fire on Batchelor, who was driving. The police have said they're following leads on two men who allegedly shot at him. We've interviewed the gardener who was with him. And we're also appealing to anyone who might have information on the incident to contact Crime Stop. So they found the gardener. Remember I was asking yesterday what happened to him and how come no one was asking about him?
Yeah, and if he's clearly survived,
yeah.
which means these people had no intentions of shooting him, didn't even care that there was a witness. It seems very specific to Mark at this point.
Apparently his brother... Warren has recounted what happened after the gunman opened fire. Batchelor's first instinct was to protect the gardener. He pushed him down, saying, "Get down, get down," and obviously the bullets hit him. He said the family had been left broken by his death. "It destroyed me. I'm devastated," he said. Batchelor's dog was also shot and wounded.
Oh, no.
In the suspected hit and was recovering. With no sign of the former professional soccer player's killers and the motive unknown, police are appealing to the public to help with any information. It's very suspicious. Anyway, I mean, I think this is a hit, and there's probably some underworld stuff going on here, and, you know, nobody wants to hear that stuff. It's often too soon, straight after, but Mark Batchelor must have said something to someone. He must have had the wrong enemy in the wrong place. There are dangerous people out there. And
honestly,
for a while,
he was... Honestly, got to admit, I'm Googling who he is.
Yeah, for a while he was one of the more dangerous people in Johannesburg. He had a hell of a reputation. So, let's be fair about this.
He's a sports guy, blonde.
He was a Bafana player.
Okay.
All right, and then the South African psychiatric nurses are at heightened risk of violence, according to a study. I'm not surprised by this. There are so many people with severe mental illness out there. I mean, we don't even scratch the surface. And in this country, we've got people who've been raised like wild animals, really. Parents who just have nothing to do with their kids. Kids who grow up feral. And they're part of society, but they really don't know how to behave. And this is why we've got such high levels of violence. And for young men, it is just a disaster. A disaster.
Yeah, there's
one in every three guys, they say, is mentally ill. But not just... Has mental,
not just a little unhappy.
No, we're talking severe problems.
Schizophrenia, bipolar disorders.
And this is as a result
chronic depression.
And it's early childhood stuff that goes wrong. You know, we hear about these horror stories of young children who are sexually abused.
Yeah.
We hear about kids who go to school starving. They come home and they get beaten.
Or they get picked on horribly at school and no one at home. Everyone at home says, lighten up or defend yourself,
yeah,
and you can't.
It's a mess. And apparently now, a recent study by the University of Johannesburg has revealed psychiatric nurses, who are obviously on the front line of treating people like this, run a very high risk of being exposed to violence and aggression from patients. No surprises there, right? But the researchers found that they work at public hospitals and have reported different forms of abuse at work, verbal and nonverbal. They say most health professionals feel uncertain about how to deal with violence and aggression. According to the study, these factors in the work environment result in low productivity, absenteeism, and a rapid staff turnover. Well, if you had to go to work every day and you stood the chance of having violence perpetrated against you...
Abuse from people at having their worst day.
Yeah. You'd try to skip work every now and then, too.
And yet there's some, I mean, some nurses who are just like totally impervious. They're there to care for people. They understand that you're, you know, that is a vocation that to me is like so commendable. I think nurses should be paid so much more than what they are. Because it's not one of those jobs where you go like, well, shit, I hate the idea of it, but I'm going to go be a nurse for the money. Yeah, you've got to have your heart in it or you won't last a month.
I have to bring in a corollary here, and that is that the...
Ooh, word of the day.
That's a sedan of a orollery.
A color.
Sorry, terrible joke.
No, seriously, corollary. Corollary.
A corollary.
Yes. I can't even say that.
It correlates.
Yeah, it comes out from the theory. The corollary to the problem that we have, to what Gord is rightly saying about how there are good nurses and they don't get paid enough, is that there are unions who protect very bad people in nursing as well. And there are lots of nurses at state hospitals especially who just really don't give a shit. And nursing is an easy profession to get into for some people. It's meant to be a caring profession, but there are a lot of these very bad apples.
I'm sure you're right.
So there's two sides to this.
But I've encountered some amazing ones.
Oh, sure. Sure, of course. And the majority would be.
And the point was more about how they're like unfazed. You were saying how it's a high psychological trauma job.
Hmm.
And there are some who just like, you can scream and shout and swear and you're coming out of anesthetic and you're not even aware of what you're saying and you sore. And, you know, my mom told me once I was coming out of anesthetic from having my appendix taken out when I was 17. And she said, like, I'd been swearing not only the foulest language she's ever heard from anyone, let alone me, but nonstop for about 10 minutes before I was aware that I was awake. Just abuse at everyone, her, the nurses.
But no, you don't know what you're doing.
I think there's also a very stark difference between someone who's just come out of anesthetic and is just a bit woozy as opposed to working in a psych ward.
Yeah,
sure.
Day in, day out, absolutely. Knowing what these people can do.
I couldn't imagine a more difficult job.
The professor in nursing science at UJ, who's Marie Pochenpool, she said, the high stress takes some of the coping mechanism away. They have less tolerance for colleagues and patients, and it can go over into their personal lives. So, you know what? Sympathy for the nurses, I think, is the overwhelming feeling here. And this is probably something that requires a lot more attention from government.
I love that surname, Buchenbull.
It's a good one.
Oh, it's a hell of a thing. But
you know, it's quite a corollary.
You were talking about undiagnosed mental problems and one in three and all of that. And there's like, there's this funny meme that my homies, my black homies tend to send out, because every time you've got people who live with anxiety, like I've got nothing but understanding and love for people with psychological issues, but you do get a lot of needy, woe is me memes that get shared about people dealing with anxiety and that kind of thing. I think sometimes it's quite attention grabby, but
of course it is.
Point is, there are memes that focus around like how hard it is. And then there's these versions that black dudes do where it's like they replace the coping mechanism advice with it be like that sometimes. And Kulani, my platonic life partner, sends me these things all the time. And it's very funny because like the black version replaces burn a candle and, you know, soak in Lang Lang.
What's an example?
It be like that sometimes. Like, I'll ask Kulani to send through a few and I'll send them to you, because it's one of those where someone says, tell me a joke, and you suddenly can't remember any. Anyway, that is very funny, the way that it's done, but it's also kind of sad. It's like, it's because like in a lot of black culture, it's kind of like,
just cope.
Just don't bring it up. It's weird. It makes the family feel uncomfortable. It's a bit not terribly manly to say, I'm really struggling.
Yeah.
Find a professional outlet that's not directly connected to your family. If that's a shame issue for you,
I've said for the longest time that there are too few social workers and therapists in South Africa, and not enough of us who are brave enough to go.
Mm.
And I'm talking particularly about men, but you know, this is a whole other discussion we don't need to get into right now. Other headlines. There's been another arson attack in the Mtwalume area on the south coast. Apparently, there's damage to over 1.6 million rand caused to a property. 40 hectares of sugarcane fields were set alight during a protest, suspected to be linked to a disgruntled group who were claiming ownership of the land. The attack followed last Thursday's arson attack and an attack on the...
I just keep imagining this arson attack.
What are you laughing at?
This rampaging arse setting fire. Oh my God, there's another arson attack. I'm sorry.
All right, arson.
Wow, cool.
Destruction of property. No arrests have been made yet, but police are monitoring the area. Meanwhile, the agricultural department's Regine Kobo says that the department sent a legal representative to access the situation. Again, it's just people. These are people who, and there might be a very high incidence of mental illness here too. They are so frustrated and disempowered that they feel the only way, and this is by no means an excuse. I mean, you should go to jail if you destroy someone else's property, and you should be locked away, and that's how you will learn that it is not socially acceptable to behave like this. But I think part of the reason that people behave like this is because they're so disconnected, yeah. So disempowered.
Total.
No one listens to them. No one even notices
them. And they
them.
Don't identify as part of society.
Yeah, they're outside.
I often wonder if I'm being insensitive by just not understanding it. I get that. I get that people are so frustrated and they don't feel like being heard. But when you are then shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get it.
These are the guys who want the land. So what do? They destroy the land. It's like people who complain that they don't have services in a particular area and then they destroy the services yes. they have. You know what it is?
You're unhappy with school delivery, no, then you burn the school.
It's severe self-loathing. That's what it is. It's an uncomfortable thing for people to deal with. But the fact is, in a community where you have no self-respect and you don't like yourself and you have a deep mental health issue because you've never been given attention, love, you feel like no one's listening to you, you don't like yourself, you don't like what your life is, then what you do is you lash out. You act out. This is what people are doing because they don't like themselves. Deep down inside, there's a massive self-loathing problem going on, and that is why these people do it. That's the psychological explanation I've been given by people who know more than me. I don't know whether it's right in every case, but that's what I hear. Why else would you do self-harm? Because that's effectively what it is.
Mm.
You know,
sometimes I think South Africa needs to close for renovations.
Yeah, we do. Just put up those cardboard.
For 3 years, like don't trade with us, don't talk to us. We're dealing with our own things. Come back after repairs.
Here's a good news story. Here's something that we need to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Certainly, it's better news than what we had 10 years ago. Last year, HIV-related deaths fell to around 770,000. That's still 770,000 people dying, but that's 33% lower than in 2010.
These are good things to focus on.
The United Nations said on Tuesday and warned global efforts to eradicate the disease were stalling as funding has been drying up. But think about how it's not the death sentence it once was.
Mm.
Highlighting the enormous progress made since the height of the AIDS epidemic in the mid-1990s, the report showed the number of people dying from the disease fell from 800,000 in 2017 to 770,000 in just 1 year. The figure was down by more than a third from 2010, when there were 1.2 million AIDS-related deaths. And you know, our country has the highest incidence in the world.
But, you know, you've got to also look at it similarly to what you were talking about now with mental health. Some people just don't want to face it. They don't want to think about it. They want to sweep it under the rug. Like, I've got a close friend who suspected he may have been exposed. Mm-hmm. And the idea that he might have been was like why he wouldn't go get a test. And it's illogical to me. It's as bad thinking you probably have HIV as having it. Because it's the same fear, but you don't know. So you believe you probably do. I get tested regularly, I know your status thing because I just want whatever little influence I have on social media, whoever gives a shit what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. just to see that I'm testing. And yeah. I got once criticized a couple of years ago, so I've been doing this for years, since social media lets you post pictures of anything, because I used to post the result of the test, and then it's like, oh, but no, now you're making people who might be positive or who are positive feel like they're on the wrong side of right. So now I just post, I've taken a test, know your status.
And I get
women who know me and who are flirting with me. And if I'm involved with somebody, like, is there something we should be talking about? Oh. And it's like, no. I just test every, depending on how sexually active I am and whether I'm in a committed thing, I test between 1 and 3 or 4 times a year, just because I think you should. Like, you should just test. Unless you've had no contact with anybody, no tattoos, you are 1,000,000% certain that the person you're committed with could not in any way possibly be cheating. Just get a test. I mean, it's like going for a – it's easier than getting your bum checked by your doctor.
Sure.
And you got to do that too when you're over 30.
I think with my medical aid, I have to do it every year anyway.
get an HIV test.
Yeah.
I found out recently you get a squillion points for through Vitality, and I've never bothered. And I like maybe should be.
No, you should be.
It's so interesting on that point, though, how much society has changed in this short span of time. You know, when you get into that YouTube rabbit hole a couple of weeks ago, I found this old interview of Charlize Theron coming into South Africa, and she was doing a lot of work with her foundation. Yeah. At that time, I think it was like 2004, 2005, was doing a lot of work with the youth and around HIV and AIDS education. And the type of language that was used then, the type of stigma that HIV and AIDS had, you know, like I saw in the video, she was just struggling to get condoms in schools to be able to use as demonstrations.
People wouldn't even talk about it.
And now look
people,
at where we are.
Yeah, people have made, we've made progress.
We've kind of made peace with it to an extent.
But we've also become a little less embarrassed and euphemistic about the language
and
we use.
Fearful as well of what we don't understand in that regard.
And I think that's healthy because
absolutely,
I think mental health is going in the same direction. I think it's a lot of people use it as an excuse to not sort out their shit.
No.
A lot of people use it as, oh, I have anxiety, so now I never have to deal with my personality problems or
But or I also think it was looked at as a weak thing. Like if you have depression, you're not able to cope?
The corollary of people using it for attention seeking is that it's becoming more and more comfortable and commonplace to talk about it. I talk about it as well.
Yeah.
I've seen friends kill themselves. I've been through some shit in my time. I've got a therapist. I'm so glad that I have one because it's such a beneficial thing to me. Another problem as well with getting help is that people haven't been to a therapist, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist for that matter, and think that when they go there, they're going to have to explain themselves to a judgy headmaster person who's going to say it's all your fault and this is why.
No, that's not what
it's just someone who's professional at listening and reflecting back to you without the context of being stuck in your head. You know, if you're feeling that, it's a sign you might be dealing with this. And someone who does that, you did something irrational at your job that you don't understand and you wish you hadn't done. Well, if you consider that you're also having that problem and that problem, it's normal for humans to react in that way. And just contextualize what you're feeling. No, it doesn't necessarily mean they give you the solutions or they tell you, well, obviously you must stop doing X and Y that you love. It's just, I think not knowing what's going to happen at the help place is as big of a problem as, you know, there being a stigma attached to going in the first place.
Here's a nice message for you, Gord. On Tuesday evenings, I make sure my earphones are charged because I cannot miss Wednesdays with Gord. It makes my whole week, even though he's an extra. And he's
an extra.
And he's very extra.
Guys.
All right, very nice.
Thank you.
And then someone says, Gord, I give a shit about your social media.
Thanks, dudes.
Yeah, it's from Marcel.
I know that Gareth likes to read the negative comments because they're more interesting than the nice ones, but there are some really nice people out there, and thank you for the nice things you say. I read them all.
This is quite scary because I think this happens more here, but we think we're the only ones. Nikki says, I have two friends in the UK who are nurses, and they both have been attacked and their lives have been threatened by gang members.
Wait.
So what, people not in the hospital, outside people, got a beef with nurses? With nurses?
These are probably patients. They're
gang members who happen to be. Yeah,
but why are nurses caught up in the equation? They're just doing the job.
Because they're the ones that have to put the sore bandage on, and they're the ones who are taking care of you, and you feel entitled, and you want something now, and they take 10 minutes instead of two to get to you. And, you know, also sometimes you're just in your worst way.
Yeah, let's close down the UK for renovations.
But I was just imagining gangs with beef against nurses. Like, we as the West Side bloodletters, and we has had enough of nurses.
Gord, if you are quoting Blood Letters, then you clearly have not been in a gang. I don't think there's a gang.
Blood Letters, not Blood Letters.
Alex says, I'm listening live for once. You guys make me look forward to the commute. Check You Can't Spell Tits is going down as one of the best inspirational quotes of all time.
What's that? You can't spell tits?
Your talk earlier. All right. So many things to get into. We've got a lineup of things. In fact, some of Johnny Clegg's friends are going to be on the line. We're going to talk about him a little bit. I think everyone in South Africa is feeling something, and most of us are feeling pretty sad about the fact that Johnny Clegg is no longer here. But he's really, I mean, as it was, a life well lived. He gave so much more than he ever got in return.
Yeah,
and the guy is a national treasure. He's an artifact of South African history, which I think When people hear the soundtrack of this country in their heads, he forms a part of it.
And that music doesn't age. You know, none of it ages. A large part of his sort of more beloved or most beloved catalog came out like in the 80s and the early 90s, and music from that period often ages badly. You've always got those bad programmed drums, and it just feels like a bit cringy. Wham, for example, hasn't aged, although they do have some great songs, so that's a bad example. But Johnny's music, almost in all cases, stands up as if he'd yeah. released the song today, it would still be a great song people love, and it's from like 1986.
All right, we got lots to get into. Stick around just after 7 o'clock. It is 4 minutes to 7, cliffcentral.com, more than halfway through the month of July already.
This is cliffcentral.com.